Welcome to The Author Show, where we present new authors and books. From fiction to self-help and everything in between, you'll find it all here. To watch the TV version of our program, visit AuthorsWebTV.com. That's AuthorsWebTV.com. And now, let the show begin with your hosts, Don McCauley and Danielle Hampson.
The Roman Empire fell. The British Empire fell. The world is asking, will the American Empire do the same? Will history repeat itself again? Or have we learned our lessons? Welcome to The Author Show. I'm Danielle Hampson. After having spent more than two decades in the high-tech security systems industry, today's author, Larry Kelly, who graduated from the University of California at Santa Barbara, saw his life change by 9/11 when he realized we were at war, and wondered what ordinary citizens could do to help defeat the attackers. In his tenure as a political commentary writer, Larry has had featured articles in numerous papers, including two of his articles featured on the cover of Town Hall magazine. So have we indeed learned lessons from the past? Lessons from fallen civilizations. Can a bankrupt America survive the current Islamic threat? Is the title of Larry's book. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thank you very much, Danielle.
History has always fascinated me, but what drew you to this subject and to write a book about it?
9/11, Danielle. I was one of those people changed by 9/11. I remember, of course, watching on the day that it happened. And then the following day, I remember driving to work and I said, oh my gosh, you know, this is war. And I then started to think about, what would be the next attacks? How many people are out there plotting? How large is the threat? What will be happening next? How will this war be waged? And so that started me into a 10-year process of writing this book, not only investigating Islam, but also how great civilizations fail, why we might fail, why we might win, what we must do to prevail.
There are numerous books available on the shelves that tackle your subject. What makes your book different?
There are numerous books out there, Danielle, that talk about the fiscal cliff that we are facing, the inability for us to finance the size and scope of our government. And there are also numerous books that talk about the threat of Islam. I think I have the only book out that combines the two.
You write that your main character is Western civilization. What do you mean by that?
Got that idea from a man by the name of Thucydides. He is our source for what's called the Peloponnesian War. It's a long, long civil war where Sparta and Athens developed a list of allies and essentially destroyed Greek civilization through this enormously long war. And in telling the story, Thucydides, we get from him, Danielle, the notion that history repeats. He was actually able in the 5th century BC to understand that principle, and I think he is considered one of the greatest thinkers of all time. And so he said that history repeats itself because human nature does not change very much. And in developing his story of the Peloponnesian War, he combined all kinds of elements, including the most popular art form at the time, which was Greek theater. And he made the Athenian people a tragic hero. In my book, I didn't realize this for a while as I was writing it, my tragic hero is Western civilization.
You developed a list of 10 principles that lead to the fall of civilizations. You call them your immutables. What are they and why do they repeat?
Well, there are 10 principles that I found that do repeat over time and for the same reason that Thucydides developed, which is that human nature doesn't change very much. He also has a list of principles that govern why civilizations do what they do. How do civilizations operate? For example, Thucydides came up with the principle that power always seeks to increase itself. Mine are a subset of his principles in that I looked at the fall of five great civilizations, and I found 10 principles that didn't repeat in all five of those, but do repeat. You can think of them as undermining factors, Danielle, the kinds of decisions that undermine and lead to the fall of a civilization.
Of the 10 immutable laws outlined in your book, which ones are the U.S. currently violating?
Well, there are 10, and I say 3 through 10. For example, the immutable number three states, appeasement of a ruthless outside power always invites aggression. Treaties made with ruthless despots are always fruitless and dangerous. It's immutable number three. And the one that most people are familiar with is the Neville Chamberlain dealing with Hitler at Munich and got this little agreement that allowed Hitler to take Czechoslovakia. Well, sadly, our president, in dealing with this Rouhani, this supposed moderate Iranian president, he's so desperate to make a deal that the Rouhani and the theocracy running Iran see him as weak. And so, as Donald Rumsfeld put it, weakness is a provocation. If you attempt to appease, and the operative word, Danielle, is ruthless. The Iranian regime are run by ruthless despots that would kill every man, woman, and child in Israel if they could and get away with it. So when you attempt to appease a ruthless despot, not only are you inviting aggression against yourself, but the act of the appeasement tells him that the time to strike is now.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I had just arrived in Europe the day before 9/11 happened, and my dad, who was living there at the time, told me, "We are in for another war of religion." With your subtitle, "Can America Survive the Current Islamic Threat?" are you saying that all Muslims are terrorists?
No, I get asked that question a lot. And what I'm saying is this. I'll quote Bernard Lewis. Bernard Lewis is the professor emeritus of Middle Eastern studies. I think he's 90 years old. Danielle, and he's written, I don't know, 30, 40 books. He's advised lots of presidents on Middle East issues. And he puts it this way, Danielle. He says, not all Muslims are terrorists, but nearly all terrorists are Muslim.
Now, how and when did Islam nearly bring down the Western world twice?
I have those in the book, and I actually write those in real time. They read sort of like a historical fiction. First time is in 732 at the Battle of Poitiers. Muhammad dies in 632. He has conquered the Arabian Peninsula. Over the next 100 years, Islam conquers two-thirds of Western Christendom, including Spain. They are coming over the Pyrenees and into southern France. Charles Martel, who is Charlemagne's grandfather, defeats the Islamic armies and pushes them back into Spain. They stay there for another 700 years and have never left North Africa or the Levant, the Middle East, which were a part of the Christian Roman Empire, which we call them the Byzantine Empire. They never called themselves that. So the way to think about it is that Islam has essentially nearly conquered the West then. In 732, if Charles Martel loses, then perhaps the balance of Western Europe falls, probably does. Then in 1683, by the way, on 9/11, September 11th, 1683, at the Battle of Vienna, now Islam has taken southern Europe and is about to take the Habsburg Empire. The capital of the Habsburg Empire at the time is Vienna. And Jan Sobieski, who is the king of Poland and it's a general, saves the city, conquers the Islamic armies that are Ottoman armies, and pushes them all the way back, almost all the way out of Europe. So those two battles, if they had gone the other way, you and I would be, you know, on our prayer rugs five times a day.
Well, I certainly would not be doing this interview right now because I would not be allowed to. So why does terrorism, in your opinion, have everything to do with Islam?
Because it teaches its children that you and I are infidels, and that if we do not want to submit to Islam, the Islamic faith have the right to conquer us and kill us or make us second-class citizens. They believe that the West, that all of the world will ultimately submit. Islam means submission.
Why, in your view, also should our government provide sanctuary to Islamic women who seek to escape their faith? And how will this help us with the fanatical side of Islam? And is that, by the way, not an invitation for more Islamic aggression?
Well, first of all, there are honor killings that happen all around the world. We hear about them a little bit in the U.S., but it's very widespread in areas of the Middle East. And so, first of all, it's the right thing to do. Secondly, what we must do, Pope Benedict, he came up with a doctrine of what he calls reciprocity. And he said, we need to call Islam out. If they're going to kill their daughters for wanting to leave the faith or not submit to a forced marriage, we need to call them out because it will put the pressure on them to change, to acknowledge they have violent tenets. Did you know that you, as an infidel, are not allowed to set foot in Medina or Mecca? And there is a national cathedral in Washington, D.C. What if the President of the United States said, on Sundays between the hours of 11 and 2, no Muslims are allowed to set foot in that church? What would it do? It would call attention to the fact that we must call them out. We're also in the battle of ideas here, Danielle. It's
right.
Not just about armies. It's about the battle of ideas. And if we submit to them, they see that as weakness. It goes back to the appeasement.
Yeah.
Same concept.
Yeah. Now, what is the connection, you think, between America's impending fiscal collapse and our declining ability to win the war with resurgent militant Islam?
People ask me often, I mentioned that I've written a book, and they'll ask me what the title is, and then often, very very often, Danielle, they'll ask me a question, something that goes something to the effect, are we doomed? And the way I answer it is this: by my reading of history, you cannot have a world-class welfare state and a world-class military. You might have neither, but you can't have both.
By the way, Larry, how would you characterize your book? Is this a history book or is it a political commentary?
It's a form of political commentary called comparative history.
And do you believe that we can change course and survive for another century? What would be your prescriptions for the preservation of our country and our way of life as we know it?
Well, Danielle, I say to people often is that by my reading of history, you cannot have a world-class welfare state and a world-class military. You might have neither, but you can't have both. And so we need to understand that the prescriptions for a bigger and bigger and bigger government will eventually crowd out our ability to be a world-class military power. And this notion that government should always get bigger needs to somehow change. A mindset that government must always grow has to be reversed.
Right.
And secondly, we must know enough about history, Danielle, to know that all great civilizations fail. And what we must do is be mindful of history, because while history is not an exact roadmap for the future, it's the only navigation aid we have.
Now, Larry, what benefit can the reader expect to gain when they read your book?
They should gain an appreciation for why history repeats. And the reason that it repeats is because human nature doesn't change that much over time. So if we get that as a people, you know, it's been said that if we as a people lose our sense of history of where we came from, it would be like you and I waking up in the morning and it suddenly lost our memory. We would be completely disoriented. We would be unable to really almost function as a human being. And so the ability to understand the past, not just how we were founded, but where Western civilization came from, is what I am endeavoring to give you in this book, and which I think I do deliver.
You know, I can only totally agree with what you were saying for one specific reason. I am originally from Europe. I was educated over there. History is a subject that I really like a lot. In school, history was always a big part of our education. And I would say that the majority of Europeans do understand very, very well the importance of knowing and understanding history in order to be able to move also forward. So we do need to know and understand the past in order to move forward. That is a concept that unfortunately does not prevail in this country.
I agree.
Back to your book. Other than, of course, selling your book, what do you hope to accomplish with it?
Well, I'm writing a column now weekly, and we do have some partners, for example, The Blaze, Freedom Outpost, and others that pick up the column. So I want to be a player in the debate as to how we go forward for the nation.
Now, over a million new titles, Larry, are printed each year, of which several hundreds of thousands are actually self-published books. What do you do to get the word out about your book?
Well, I have a website, which is www.larrykelly.com, Kelly with an E-Y, and you'll see all my pieces are posted there. And we've been getting some really nice radio appearances as well. on coast to coast. And so it's a twofold effort. One, writing these pieces that will make me an interesting guest going forward on radio shows, as well as being on various internet websites.
How can readers find your book?
The easiest way to find it is www.lessonsfromfallencivilizations.com or www.larrykelly.com. Both of them, there will be an Amazon, the book cover, and then the Amazon button underneath. You click on the Amazon button, it takes you right to the Amazon page. You can look in, there's a look inside where you can read a couple of the chapters and read the reviews.
Give us those two websites again, please.
www.larrykelly.com or www.lessonsfromfallencivilizations.com to the Amazon page.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Larry, it was indeed a pleasure having you on the Author Show today. I want to thank you for sharing your historical perspective and insight with us, and hopefully history this time around will not repeat itself.
Hopefully, yes.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. Thank you.